KPI.org.
Greetings. You're tuned to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This is Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. I want to tell you, we want to hear from you. So if you want to email us and let us know what you think of the show and ideas that you might have, what you'd like to hear on the show, you can do so by emailing us at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Charlene Dahl is my research woman. Hello, Charlene.
Good evening, everyone.
Aaron is my podcaster, and I'm the engineer. This week, we have Scott Hatley, founder of the nonprofit Insight, I-N-C-I-G-H-T, in Portland, Oregon, which has been around for almost two decades, helping people with disabilities unlock their fullest potential. Scott is with us, and he's going to talk about this nonprofit and let us know all that we need to know. Hi, Scott.
Hey there, Sam. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. I want to at least start out by having you tell your story and why you decided to start this nonprofit Insight.
Yeah, well, and thank you again, Sam, for the opportunity. I'm excited to be here with your audience. And Insight was an organization that started with a view of my college classmates, and we just saw the stats around people with disabilities not succeeding, not being employed. We also, from our own experiences having disability, saw the need for an organization that could help really change the culture around disability and help people with disabilities leverage their obstacles to find success and unlock their potential. And so that's kind of been their journey the last couple of decades.
What's Insight's mission?
So our mission is threefold. Our focus is changing hearts and minds, leveraging obstacles, and unlocking potential. And that's our mission. And it's part of our larger vision of moving the world, expecting great contributions with people experiencing disabilities.
And do you have a disability?
I do, yeah. So at age 4.5, I was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Uh-huh. So at that time, you know, my parents didn't know what to expect. And so we just kind of played the hand we'd been dealt and figured out life and just leveraged obstacles as best we could. And now I'm happy to report that last month I just celebrated my 44th birthday.
Good job. So this is really pretty personal.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think it's also a significant accomplishment thinking about it, because there aren't a lot of individuals with Duchenne muscular dystrophy specifically that have made it to this point in life. And so, yeah, I've just kind of always been inspired to want to do what I can to help create more opportunities for those with disabilities who maybe haven't had the same journey or opportunities I've had in my life.
I want to talk a little bit about changing hearts and minds. I really like that. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means to you?
Yeah, well, you know, there's so many organizations in the community that serve individuals with disabilities in different ways. And yet we really feel like one of the key points that's holding back the statistics is, I think it's a bit of an awareness piece. So helping sort of change the culture around disability in our community and helping individuals that and organizations that haven't, let's say, had as much interaction with those with disabilities to help them kind of be invited into that conversation. Because it feels like, you know, there's one, two sides of the equation. There's that side, and there's always, how do we help more people with disabilities, you know, see their obstacles and leverage it to success? And so, you know, we can't kind of do one without the other, I believe.
You do offer, it looks like you offer scholarships for school. Yes?
We do, yeah.
Can you
We
talk a little
do
bit about
scholarships.
that?
Yeah, so that's actually our signature program. We've been doing it for about 18 years. We just really saw that often that where students fell through the crack was right after high school. And so if we could provide some tools that would help them with their education path, give them some resources, and then also connect them to an organization that could be there to support them each step of the way, whether it's, hey, I need a mentor, I need an internship, you know, I need support in finding a job. So just having a place that they could turn to through their journey, you know, because a lot of the relationships in schools end at 18 or 21, and then kids are on their own. And so if we could connect them with something that would help them, we thought that would be a huge aspect of success for them.
I'm curious to know, do you have statistics on like where your people who get your scholarships go or the job statistics at all?
So we, when we look at our group, we have students that go to all kinds of different schools. And so, you know, we have a pretty good retention rate in our scholarship program. Sometimes it can be a challenge to keep track of everybody as far as jobs and employment. But we've seen that a fair number of our scholars have been able to land an employment either on their own or with our support. So we felt pretty good about kind of the success rate of that. And yet realizing that's not the only piece of the whole equation as well.
I just want to quiz you a little more on the scholarship because I think
Sure.
it's a great thing to have. Is it a full scholarship? Is it a certain amount? Is it, and how does that work? What are the qualifications?
Unfortunately, it's not a full scholarship, you know, and we grant or increase the value every time, every year, and as the organization grows and progresses. Our scholarships range from around $500 to about $2,500. And it depends on the kind of progression in school. Many times when you're just starting out with us, it's a smaller scholarship. And then as you stay with us, we increase it. We also are focused our scholarship right now on the West Coast. So it's California, Oregon, Washington. But in time, we'd like to expand it back nationally again. And so it's kind of a great way to connect people to us as well, beyond just the fiscal, you know, award of money. It's a way for them to be connected to a group, an organization that can support them.
And do they have to be going to school at the time that they get the scholarship?
That's what we strive for, is that students are in school taking a certain number of credit hours. We don't try to make it too overly difficult just because we know sometimes individuals face some difficult situations and maybe full-time student status isn't exactly their, you know, what they can do the best. And so we try to kind of work with the students, but you know, want them to be engaged and be at least on the track. Because sometimes we have students that are, it feels like, on the 8-year track. And so it's like, how can we kind of speed you up and down a little bit?
I'd like to talk about the idea of reframing skull perceptions. And you talk a lot about that on your website and for obstacles. How do you do that and teach people to, strive to overcome their obstacles and find, enjoyment in doing that and overcoming the obstacles? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so one of my favorite mission points of our organization is leveraging obstacles. And so I think that really speaks to what you're kind of talking about. And it's one of those things where there's a lot of elements to it. We kind of talk about dynamic adaptability. And so, you know, like for me personally, I think some of what has helped me over the years is I've kind of just looked at situations and had the mindset of like, I need to figure out how I can use different connections or relationships, not in a bad way, but to help me succeed and help me pursue things in life. And so, you know, some of that's having mentoring relationships. It's being able to, I would say another key aspect is developing compensating assets. And so we use that term a lot around Insight. And so an example of that is, you know, in my situation, I don't have a lot of dexterity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm pretty much reliant on my computer. So if I'm in front of my computer, I can take notes. But if I'm just out meeting with people, it's hard to really take notes other than having someone else do it. And so I've just kind of developed what I call my superpower. And I just have an ability to never forget a name and a face.
Ah,
and so,
excellent.
I've practiced that and honed that over the years. And so because of that, like, it kind of just sticks with me. And so I remember a lot of details. And so for me, that's a way I've been able to overcome my physical limitations. obviously, there's a lot of other examples of how many of us in the community have found other ways to compensate for the challenges. So I don't know if that exactly answers your question,
but I think
what comes to mind when I think about it.
Yeah. I think we need to borrow you once in a while for our radio show. I could use that, remembering everyone that's been on. Somebody's like, you mean you don't remember everyone? I'm like, do you know how many people come?
Right. I was going to say, over time, it probably gets challenging to remember every guest.
I'm wondering, you know, I think people don't always seek out how to kind of challenge themselves around obstacles. Mm-hmm. How do you encourage that? Because I think that's a really valuable, you know, goal and things to do. It's easy to get comfortable, but how do you mm-hmm. challenge yourself to keep working that around when you find an obstacle to overcome it?
I love that question, Sam. You know, one of the things is the saying is that, like, most of your, you know, greatest potential is just outside your comfort zone. Mm. So it's important for all of us to challenge that. And it can be hard sometimes, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
I think we find our rhythm, but, you know, some of the ways that I've challenged myself at different points is, you know, I'm in a much different spot than I was right out of college. I was so shy and just always anxious. And if you had asked me to do this show, I would have been really just, it would have been paralyzing almost. And so what I had to do is just kind of step out there and do some things that were uncomfortable. And I did a lot of public speaking, and it would be funny to actually go back and see the first time I public spoke, because I would probably laugh at myself and think it looked really embarrassing. But, you know, it's like you have to build the momentum. I
right.
kind of see it as like a snowball effect. Like, you can't just most people can't just jump from here to there. You know, you have to kind of build up to those experiences. So I was like, I think, was it Eleanor Roosevelt once said something about, like, do something every day that scares you.
That's
yeah,
a really
I've
good.
I've always been good about that. But, like, you almost just have to kind of find those opportunities where you can just do a little something that's uncomfortable, and then you build on it, and, you know, you get more comfortable.
You know, I like that. I should encourage myself to do that. I think it's easy to say, well, you know, I'm happy when I'm content and not, but then you don't learn, right? I found myself trying to explain that to somebody once who was very content just being where she was and not really striving for anything. And that really sat wrong with me. I had a hard time with that. Mm-hmm. Not only because I have a belief that one should always do that, and I realize I need to step mine up too, but how do you kind of convince someone that you can balance, you know, happiness with being uncomfortable in a way, not making yourself look horrible, but it feels like if you never, accept that you're going to have some struggles or be uncomfortable, you will never grow.
Right. No, I think that's a great point. I found that many times it's helpful to walk next to people, because I have a lot of people in my life that walk next to me. And when I maybe struck out or, you know, had a moment where I sort of maybe bit off more than I could chew, they were often there.
I think we've all been there.
And pick me up because they maybe have a little more confident.
Right.
So I try to walk with other people as best as I can with them in that journey, and then encourage them and challenge them in a way. Because you're right, if you never get out there, you're never gonna grow. And I think it's hard because I think a lot of people with various disabilities I've seen, I think they get caught up in some of the fear and sort of like, how do I do this? And they don't always have a great role model that necessarily shows them the steps. And so I've kind of been a little bit of a trailblazer, and yet sometimes there's moments in time where I'm like, I'm not satisfied with where I'm at. Like, let's shake it up a little bit. And
Yes.
unfortunately, I've been able to kind of like, I think it goes even to that point of the motion. Like, once you start to kind of get the snowball rolling, it makes it that much easier, and it's almost like the steps compound upon each other, and
Right.
then things just sort of help fall in place a little bit.
Somebody told me something once, and I carry it with me, and I often do think of it, and he said, "Change is inevitable, growth is optional." And I think that is so very true. And your website, just the wording on it, reminded me of that so much, that you can choose to grow or not to grow, but there will always be changes. Nothing will ever stay the same.
Well, and that's what we always work on here at Insight as well, is like, things are going to change. How do we adapt or be ready to confront those changes when they happen? And it's not always easy. I think that's the thing that it seems like it's very simple. The answers are simple, it seems like, in life. Sometimes they're just not easy.
Right. Scott, I'm wondering, you talk a little bit on your mission and your website about awakening, and I wonder if you could talk about what does it mean to experience an awakening opportunity and how can one recognize it?
So ultimately, the aspects of even my personal journey and Insight is to awaken the opportunities for those with disabilities. And so for I see awakening opportunities as kind of a couple different aspects. It's helping with what are the tools and steps that kind of put you in that situation. I would say I always knew I wanted to do something meaningful in my life, but I didn't always know what that was going to be. But I did certain things in my life that set me up for that opportunity. So it was, I had high expectations growing up. Family expected things of me. I was in a culture of a city that kind of expected kids were going to college, and so all my friends went to college. And then I went to college. I met the right like-minded people, and then started Insight. And so it was these steps that I just kept moving forward and kept building forward. And so lots of our programs here at Insight are geared toward how do we help individuals move forward and build forward in their life, whatever step that we're meeting them at, whether it's, hey, we're meeting them in high school and helping them broaden their opportunities and thought processes, or if they're in college and they're coming to us, or if they're coming to one of our job fairs as an employer or as a job seeker looking for a new opportunity or a chance to redefine their career. And so it's really, I would say, just opening up those doors to awaken the opportunities in their life.
You said something that really triggered something with me, and you said your family had expectations. And I think that really is a key thing. I teach technology to people who are visually impaired and sometimes deaf and blind. And I think you see two types of people. You see the families that expect things from their children, and they often go on to do well. You also see the families that don't have high expectations of any of their kids, and they either have that motivation and drive to do better or they don't. So, do you do any kind of education with families that around expectations? Because I think that's a big thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mentioned it earlier, but one of the things that happened when I was diagnosed is my parents, one of the doctors that diagnosed me, basically just said, hey, you're going to grieve for a period of time over the loss of the well child. And then you're gonna have to pick up the cards and the hand you've been dealt and play them as best as you can. And so my parents took that to heart. And so that's always stuck with me. And when I'm talking to families and, what I kind of seek to do is be a role model. And I think many times, even families that do have expectations sometimes can get caught in the details of not knowing quite what steps to take. And so they almost need to see people that are in similar situations to them and their families and see them succeeding and see the path they're going. And it's motivating for them. I think what I've also found is, as I also mentioned, I'm 44 now and I've well outlived. Like, I'm probably in the 1% of people with Duchenne that are still alive. And so I really put, or I ascribe that to having a purpose in my life and really feeling like I've got a direction and I feel like it's given me something to strive for. And there's a lot of families I think that sometimes don't see that. They feel like it's like the end of the world. And so, in a way, I've outlived some of my high school classmates over the years. So it's like just thinking about how rich my parents' life has been because of the journey we walked. And so, it's like helping families, I think, have that expectation, but realize there's a richness that can still come by just, you never know what the journey is going to be like. Anybody can achieve success. It's just a matter of the path to get there and the support they have along the way, I believe.
Do you think that awakening opportunities can be sought out, or do you think they just happen?
I think it's both, to be honest. I think you can seek it out, but I think when you are seeking it out, sometimes momentum builds and then opportunities kind of start to happen. And I don't want to say exactly fall in your lap, but I almost feel like sometimes you can create your own opportunities. Like, I know that sounds simple, but there's a little bit of both. I think you have to have a vision at times, either a vision for your life or a vision for your career. And then once you have that vision, you can kind of figure out like, what are the steps that it would take me to get to that vision? And that changes along the way.
I think taking risks is a part of things, and you talk about it, and I wonder what makes you take risks. I think there's a certain amount of how do I take risks and still feel okay and not feel so scared that I'm off balance and paranoid or have so much anxiety. How do you learn that happy balance there?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up because I do believe you're right. There are risks that are part of it, or some people call it calculated risk. Like, you don't necessarily just go bungee jump or something, but you kind of figure out the steps. I would say for me, I've had to build up to that, and I would say most people have to build up to it. I wouldn't say I was exactly a type of person that was a risk taker earlier in my life, and I've been around people that were more of that kind of mindset, and I've seen how they succeeded, and how they've kind of dealt with those challenges as they've done it. But I think there's one of those things where I feel like there's very few things in life that can't be course corrected. And I think it's been easy for me in some ways because I had a support network. So, when I was right out of college, I was living with my parents for a good chunk of time working to launch Insight just because we didn't have the resources to pay me full time. And so I feel like I got to a point where I was like, I kind of want to live independently again, like I did in college in the dorm. And so I just set the vision and I started to leverage some relationships I had, and they led to a connection to an apartment. And then I used my university connections to find some students that were in the nursing program that could help me with nursing. And so, like, I kind of took that leap, knowing that I had my family that I could sort of step back on if that didn't work out. And so that was back in like 2016. And so, it's worked out great and I'm thriving and finding caregivers and all that. And so, it was one of those where I had to take that risk, or I would have probably still been living with my parents if I hadn't done that. So, I guess that's kind of where my mind goes.
You know, and I think you said a couple key things that give you a little bit of a parachute. I mean, you had a family that kind of you knew was there. That was good. But you talked about all these different steps you had to take. You had to take a financial step, right? You had to take a PCA or a caregiver step. You had to take, you know, you had to make plans. And when somebody doesn't have a parachute, or how do you talk about to them about making connections and building their parachute or figuring out what they can do?
Yeah, there's so many places for people to get involved. And so, you know, I even know I've talked to other people with disabilities and they talk about the struggles of friendships. And it's like, they're like, I feel like I'm doing all the work in the relationship. And so, you know, for me, I don't get caught up in that stuff. I'm like, well, if I'm doing all the work, I mean, that's fine. If it means that we're having a connection, like friends and family get busy, they have kids, they have families. And so I always encourage people, you know, whether they have a parachute or not, it's like there's so many ways to make connections in the community. I mean, you can get involved in a service club like Rotary or, you know, Kiwanis Club. You can get involved in your college that you go to. You can get involved in churches. You can get involved in community centers. There's just some, or you can volunteer at animal shelters. You can volunteer at homeless shelters. I mean, there's just so many ways that we can get out there and make connections. And I think it gets easy to sort of get paralyzed in a, you know, spot where it's like, I don't know what to do. And so Sometimes I feel like it's just kind of stepping out there and just seeing what group fits. Like, you might go to a Rotary Club and feel like, well, these aren't my people. Or, You know, go to a place you're volunteering and be like, these aren't my people. And so, you know, I think you just have to keep working at it until you find your community and your network.
I think you're absolutely right. Scott, I want to talk a little bit about relationships and how do different cultures and faith traditions shape people's ideas of relationships?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say relationship is a key part of many different cultures. And yet I know even in our culture, sometimes maybe we're not as focused on relationship. And I also know over the years and centuries, sometimes disabilities have a different relationship with family, if that makes sense. So, I don't know. I'm not quite sure I'm answering your question exactly.
No, I just, it occurs to me when I thought about this is that, you know, there are actually some cultures that don't accept disabilities. So it can be very difficult for families when they have a child with a disability because their culture just doesn't allow for that or looks down on that, let alone later, even if you fast forward, thinking about that person having a romantic relationship just isn't seen all the time. And that latter part, I feel like crosses over more boundaries than just people culturally not accepting disability. Even in the able-bodied world, sometimes, you know, they think, well, and I've heard this, that you should be matched up with somebody who is a disability, who has a disability, because of course you have a disability, or what, you have a relationship and you have a disability. So I wonder if you could speak a little bit to that and what your thoughts are on those two things.
Absolutely. Well, so with that context, you know, I kind of see relationships as one of those complex things at times. And I think what probably makes it complex is the people. Like, we're just all complex creatures, and sometimes interacting together, it can add some different aspects. But you know, I've always found that, I've been able to have good relationships with people of all different kind of types of ability, you know, whether it's a visible disability or an invisible disability, or maybe not anything documented kind of disability with individuals. And yet I also know that relationships can be complex, and especially when you add disability and you add opposite sex, and, you know, there's all these different pieces that can play into it.
Right.
And so I wouldn't say I'm any kind of expert, and I feel like it's one of those things we just have to continually work at and work on. And I feel like some of what disability culture building involves is how do we help people and kind of meet people where they're at. So those who maybe don't have as much experience with disability and help, as individuals with disabilities ourselves, how do we share our experiences so they get an understanding of what it means to have a disability and what kind of challenges we navigate on a daily basis and, how that can interface with relationship. I guess that's kind of what comes to mind when I'm kind of in answering your question.
Yeah. I wonder if you could dig a little deeper and tell me, like, how do we kind of connect and share and show them that we too are human, or that we want to be included, not, just be there part of the woodwork, but be inclusive really as a whole.
Yeah, well, I found over my years that people with disabilities sort of interact differently or have different levels of tolerance for questions that maybe could be inappropriate or geared toward inappropriate. And for me, I've always been an open book. And I'm used to going in to speak to elementary school kids, and they're always asking questions like, how do you go to the bathroom, or why do you wear glasses? And many
It's all
times,
part of
curious.
it, right?
Exactly, they're curious, and if obviously people have different levels of comfort, and those are very personal questions, and then when you tell them the answer, they're kind of like, oh, okay, I got it, I'm good, and they move on. They don't get kind of stigmatized by it. And as we become adults, I think we still have those questions that kindergartners and elementary school kids have, and yet we don't really actually know how to ask those questions or maybe ask them appropriately. And so I try to kind of just meet people where they're at and just be an open book. And I'm trying to answer as many questions as I can. And if it seems like it's way off the wall, I kind of redirect it a little bit. But I try to sort of allow people to ask their questions and get a feel for me, because I feel like they're not trying to be offensive. They're trying to just kind of make a connection. And so I feel like that's where the changing hearts and minds comes in, is how do we help people build relationships so that they maybe can get to know the person first and then sort of find the way to ask questions that meets that person where they're at. Whether it's, hey, there's someone like me who's an open book versus somebody that maybe isn't quite as forthcoming with, information about their condition.
I love your concept. I remember being on the bus many years ago, and it was after, just after I had gotten my first guide dog, and some small child, probably 4 or 5 or 6, started asking questions, and I remember the mother shushing them, and I remember automatically just saying, "No, don't do that." I had this feeling that fear is the biggest, when you get made fun of when you're growing up. It's a fear thing, right? I feel like it's because the unknown and fear. Kids are scared of the unknown. They are also afraid of what they don't know. And when they do know something, all of a sudden it's just not so fun to make fun of anymore. It's just there's nothing there to make fun of. They already know. So, I wish adults would take a page from that. I
Well,
think, go
I
ahead.
think you're so right. I have a trach and a vent, and sometimes kids are like staring at the vent and the trach, and they're just like, what's going on? And you tell them like, hey, that's how I breathe, and it helps them understand. And so then I have a feeling the next time they see someone at the vent, they'll just be that much more comfortable with them, and it won't feel like as it won't be as fearful, because it won't be as much of a, I don't know the right term, but they'll be comfortable with it. It won't be a shock to them.
It feels like your nonprofit does a lot of education, and one of the things that I think is lacking that I just may not know the right nonprofit, so I probably will get in a lot of trouble from this next thing, or maybe not. But I feel like there's the education over in churches and religious, you talk a little bit about faith. That's a huge gap, I think, with people with disabilities and faith. I think people with disabilities often have faith. Some do, some don't, just like people with no disabilities. But I feel like the inclusiveness, like true inclusiveness, is sorely lacking. I think that people certainly say hello to you when you walk through the door in church, but oftentimes that's where it stops. Hi, how are you today? Just done. Where is the, would you like to sit by us? Would you like to sit with us during coffee break? Hey, I have somebody who needs help with thing. And I think this is a big one. There often churches have charity that they do. When do they ever include you in helping the charity, not just being the charity? So I wonder if you guys ever do anything with that, or if you ever have some thoughts on that and the thoughts of doing anything with that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. If the faith community is a huge network that when leverage can really make significant change. And I think, you know, disability's just still been one of those uncomfortable aspects. And you don't always see people with disabilities out at churches. You know, like, I'm a person of faith, and so I'm a church attender, and, you know, I don't see a lot of individuals in chairs like myself
right.
at times. I'll see older folks that, you know, are maybe older in age using chairs. And so I think you're right. There's a huge opportunity there as well. I know we've done some of our employment events at churches in the past. And it was great because it kind of, we had a network of some volunteers that could help. And so, you know, I think some of what we even talk about is how do we change hearts and minds of organizations? And so many times, you know, I've been saying, like, not just for-profit businesses, but nonprofits and even government agencies and even the education system. And I haven't necessarily been including churches in there, but I love that you kind of brought that up, because I think that is an aspect of it. And I don't know. I'm sure we could dive in to a lot of reasons.
Yeah. But I think that's what pulls people away, right? They feel excluded. Right. I'm good enough to sit my bottom in your pew, but that's where it ends. And then after a while, they fall away because they don't want to just to be a hot seat. They want to be more than that. So I hope somebody's listening who gets it and who is doing a lot with that. And I'd love to hear from them. But I just, it's one of those things that I think as my growing up definitely was one of the things that pulled me from church going, is that's exactly how I felt. And that just was not enough. You know, it did two things. It made me feel like religion isn't just, or faith even, isn't just going to church. You can have faith and you can not go to church. You can have faith and be a churchgoer. And then what kind of faith do you have? Are you really a truly good person who tries to work good, or are you just attending? So there's all of that. But it's more than just that. It's what happens when you get to the church, and how do people make you feel? Just like in any group, you talked about the Rotary group and things like that. So I appreciate you touching on that.
I think there's pieces of it too. I think it's, I mean, we're all, you know, when you, let's say, for instance, like, so I'm part of a Christian church. And so, you know, it's like, we're all sinful. We all have sin. And it's like, just because someone goes to church doesn't mean they're necessarily a perfect person or they do things
that's right
all the time. And so it's, you know, it's kind of that hard thing. And I think sometimes people behind the church wall can be judgmental, you know. And sometimes I think people on the outside of the church wall can sort of be turned off. And yet I feel like in my own personal life, my faith, it really kind of depends on what I put into it. And so, like, it's like taking the steps and it just builds and it builds. And so sometimes it's like, you know, you may not feel the vibe right away of inclusion. And sometimes as an individual, like, aside from what, you know, would be good for organizations to do in their own organization, like, what can I do to, like, take a step forward and just kind of keep pushing a little bit longer and until I can make some connections? Because I've even found that sometimes it takes a while to really find your inclusion or your
Right.
kind of spot with people. And some of that is getting involved more, and some of it's building relationships, and some
Right.
of it's just meeting the right people that kind of open doors for you. So I think there's a lot to dig, still kind of dig into on that too.
Thank you for that. Scott, I had this thought after we were talking, and when you talk about kind of keep on keeping on and reaching out, where do you how do you find that energy to keep doing it? Sometimes I think sometimes people reach out two, three, four times and like, I'm sick of reaching out. I want someone to reach to me. They get tired of being the one who's the one reaching out all the time. And so I'm wondering, and obviously you need to refuel or get some energy to keep doing it. What's your personal secret?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like some of that could be a little bit inner drive of just wanting to be part of society, and it could be this idea of, like, I think some of us with disabilities kind of want to find that normal, and yet there
Yeah.
isn't really a such thing. There
No,
isn't
there
really
really isn't, is
normal.
there?
No, and so I think a lot of my life, I just wanted to be normal and, do what normal people do. And so that's always kind of driven me, even though as now I've gotten older, I'm like, well, I am not normal and no one is exactly normal. And so I think maybe that's been a little bit of a comfort as well as I've grown, is that, I'm just really, I've been someone that's been driven by relationship. And so being able to build relationships is exciting to me. And so I think that's what I'm gonna drive. I think just faith has been a big part of my life, of just being motivated to wanna, serve the Lord and just make the steps and, be able to make a difference in society and, help people's path. And so I think that's driven me a little bit. Obviously, I think having family support is really pushing me as well. I see my sister out there making connections, and so I was like, hey, I want that same thing. And so I guess that's what I have to share about that.
Is funny that you say that, and I remember growing up hearing, you're not normal, or act normal, or, and somebody once said to me, Sam, nobody remembers anyone who's like everyone else. And it
Right.
hit me then. I was like, oh, what do I want to be? And so I often tell my kid that when they complain about, Mom, why did you give us such a weird name? Or why did, like, nobody remembers anyone who's like everyone else. And for good or bad, right? The extra bad get memorized and the extra ordinary get memorized. No in between, it seems, but what do you want to see for Insight in the future?
Well, we're an organization that's West Coast focused. And we would really like to be able to elevate the conversation, even many of the topics we've talked about today, to a larger audience. There's a lot of organizations out there doing great work, and yet it just feels like one of the next progression steps. It feels like, the ADA has been around since 1990, and it feels like we've made progress, and yet it feels like we haven't. And
There's so far to go,
it's
yeah.
been 33 years. And so it's kind of like, well, what's the deal? Why are we not making the progress we want when it seems like we have all the technology in the world now, and now artificial intelligence is really stepping up, and there's still progress, but there's a lot of aspects in the built environment that are accessible to people with disabilities. And so, like, what's the holdback? And so we feel like it's this conversation we're having and changing hearts and minds. And so at Insight, we'd really love to continue to elevate that conversation. We have a magazine called The Understanding. We do trainings and content. And so we'd love to be able to see that take off nationally. Personally, I'm working to write a book. And so I'd love for that to be able to help elevate some conversation down the road. And so I would say that's really where Insight's at. How do we invite more people into this conversation so it doesn't So they're, part of it. That it doesn't feel like it's shameful or, pushing them away. It's just like, how do we help them sort of have some of those 6-year-old questions and, all the pieces. So,
Talk about your magazine.
yeah. So it's called The Understanding, and it's all about pushing positive perspectives. And so we like to share stories, and we work to do to balance it out. So we have multiple disabilities covered. So one magazine we highlight somebody that heard voices, and so we kind of highlighted that aspect of disability. We've highlighted somebody who has had more obsessive compulsive disorder and some different disabilities. And we've highlighted organizations that are doing work around people with disabilities. So we're really about how do we advance the conversations? How do we create a magazine that promotes thought leadership and tells stories of people succeeding? And so that's been our focus. And so it's still a very small grassroots magazine, but we feel like it could become an important mouthpiece for the kinds of conversations we're having.
How do people get the magazine?
So right now, you can either go to Insight's website, incight.org, or you can go directly to our website for the magazine, which is theunderstandingmagazine.com.
Cool. I think you'll be getting some visitors.
Oh, excellent. We love to have visitors, and we're open for ideas. We also are wanting to recruit more authors, even nationwide, that would be willing to write and contribute to the magazine.
Cool. So in I first of all I want to thank Cody. Cody kind of reached out to us and suggested you for this radio show and podcast, and I he said you had a goal of being on, I think it was 10 podcasts this year. So how many is
Yes,
this for
that's
you now?
correct. So this is my second podcast.
Woo!
So we're building traction, and so we're hoping to get on a few more this year. 10 might be ambitious for year one.
Well, maybe he's an ambitious kind of guy, I guess.
Right. But then I also feel like if you don't throw out ambition there, like how are you gonna ever reach it,
That's right.
So
That's
we'd be
exactly
happy if
it.
we settled on 5, but we'll see what happens this year.
Well, congratulations on all of this. And I love the idea of the magazine. I think that takes a lot to keep it up. And I hope to be able to get a look at that. So, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
Well, I just really feel like we have so much potential still, people with disabilities, people without, and especially around this conversation. So, I just want to encourage the audience to just think like, what can you do to help advance, this potential and help people leverage the obstacles and change society for the better? And so I feel like having these conversations is one, step of many that helps make that happen.
Well, I wish you a lot of good success with the nonprofit Insight, and I'm sure that I'll be taking a closer look. And thank you for reaching out. And I want to encourage other people to reach out. I started growing up in Washington State, so I know that area, and I've been in lived in Oregon before when I was a teenager. So beautiful area. I just love those
Yeah, it
areas.
really is. Northwest is a great place to be. So I really appreciate it, Sam. It's been a pleasure to chat with you and join your audience today.
Thank you, Scott. Take care.
All right, take care.
This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This has been Disability in Progress. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks so much for tuning in.
KFAI.org.